Here is the reigning MVP with the ball moments ago. Jokic and a three by Curry. He's made over 3,000 in his Hall of Fame career. Here comes DeRozan.
Oh, it's a layup. Curry. What we call layup, Kevin.
In the corner three.
That's right.
That is a layup.
That's a layup.
That's a layup.
A lot of assists here for Trae Young. We're talking with Dirk Nowitzki. Way outside. Three is put in by Stephen Curry.
Pulling up from half court. It's unbelievable.
Look at that. Look at this. Oh my goodness.
When he's hot, you scream at the TV at home. Shoot.
He's already got some.
Oh!
Performance and a feed, and James, look at this.
Fast step.
So many hot passes, we can't keep up. And another three. Come on!
He's asking to go in.
And picked up by the charging Jared Allen. And Curry with 45. 52's the record.
Steph Curry putting on a show last night at the NBA All-Star Game in Cleveland. 16 three-pointers. And the best one was the one he shot, and he turned around. He shot from almost half court, in between half court and three-point line. It was about 35, 40-footer. He just turned around, didn't even watch it go in. That was how hot he was, and that was fantastic. Theater and entertainment, NBA All-Star Game, no defense until the fourth quarter. And then it got interesting, and it came down to the target score of 163 points. LeBron a chance to win it in his old stomping grounds of Cleveland.
Look at LeBron calling for it, Reg.
He is from Akron.
Let's do it.
Cleveland.
Let's do it in Cleveland. Cleveland!
This is for you.
Got it! Got it!
That's the winner! Cleveland!
Cleveland!
This is for you! Game-winning shot by LeBron James.
So that was how the game ended, as Team LeBron wins over Team Durant, even though Durant wasn't even there. And they raise a lot of money for different charities that they do each year, the NBA All-Star Game, which I think is terrific. And they do a lot more money that comes about their All-Star Game than the Pro Bowl. I had a conversation with somebody about charity and the Pro Bowl. Yeah, the Pro Bowl, there is some charity that's involved in regards to some incentives, but nothing to the level of the NBA. And let's be honest, which organization has more money? The National Football League is a much bigger entity than the NBA. So the NBA raising a ton of money for different charities last night. It was the Greater Cleveland Food Bank, and then also the I Promise Schools there with Kent State University that LeBron has put together. And so it was fun to watch. You know, I watched the All-Star Game. We watched part of it, most of it, really. And, of course, it's just layups, dunks, three-pointers. There's no defense. But the fourth quarter, you could see the intensity go up, and you saw Joel Embiid was trying to win. I mean, he wanted to win the game, and I mean, Giannis is giving good effort, and at least there's effort somewhere during the All-Star game. I had somebody put on social media who apparently doesn't watch a lot of stuff. That's a guy that used to be in radio saying that the NBA All-Star game is worse than the Pro Bowl. I'm like, did you watch the whole NBA game? Because the Pro Bowl, they never try that hard.
No.
At all. There's no fourth quarter we suddenly hit anybody. And it is a different sport. It's comparing apples to oranges from one standpoint, and that is the physicality of the game, no doubt. But players are putting their health at risk by playing hard or even competing at all in these exhibition games. And the other big difference in NFLs is after the season's over, NBA is in the middle of the season. You could argue there's even more reason for the NBA not to do anything, these players, because they still have season to go, whereas Pro Bowl, it's like, hey, you get hurt, you still get the whole offseason to recover. You could argue that. So anyway, the slam dunk contest was a joke. Ja Morant needs a – listen, the slam dunk contest is a joke until the stars that are really stars, that are really good dunkers, compete. So that part, it was a waste of time. That dunk contest, first of all, you got only four to compete in it in the first place. It used to be they had eight. It was a bigger deal. Now you're not getting the stars to do it, and it's because they're worried about health. You know, your superstars aren't usually doing it. We've had some really good dunk contests since Dominique and Jordan, you know, and Vince Carter. We've had some. I mean, Aaron Gordon should have won it probably twice.
Mm-hmm.
This year's dunk contest was a complete dud. There were better dunks in the NBA All-Star game last night than there were in the dunk contest. The three-point contest was pretty cool stuff. Karl-Anthony Towns, who, remembering his mother who passed away due to COVID, and he's 6'11" center or power forward, and he won the 3-point contest, which nobody was betting against him. He said afterwards, I want to know who bet against me. A lot of people bet against you, Carl Anthony Towns. He had 29 points, which set a record in the final round in the Mountain Dew 3-point contest, breaking Devin Booker's record. Of course, Steph Curry was the reigning champ, and so, and I don't know why Steph isn't in the 3-point contest to defend the championship. That's another thing I don't understand. Mm-hmm. Did Steph not want to do it? I mean, why not? That creates – why wouldn't you
– that had to have been the case that he didn't want to do it.
Got
to
be.
And
that's
it's the not thing like they would say, no, we don't want you.
Right, and that's the thing with the dunk contest too. It's like the stars aren't – Ja Morant, they were pleading with him during the All-Star game, please do the dunk contest next year. And they've talked about LeBron when he was younger. Please do the dunk contest. And it's just not going to happen. There's too much money on the line for these star players, and the organizations themselves probably don't want – it's a 3-point contest to me, big deal. But the dunk contest, I can see where, you know, if you're the owner of the Memphis Grizzlies, you probably don't want Ja Morant doing all of that in an exhibition situation. Although he's playing the All-Star game, he could get hurt doing a 360 in the All-Star game too. And he had awesome like catch behind his head, reverse jam. It was pretty sweet last night during a game. So anyway, the 3-point contest I thought was good. Dunk contest, complete dud. Skills competition was fine. Cleveland Cavaliers, a trio of young guys, win that. And then the All-Star game is what it is until the fourth quarter when it gets a little bit interesting. But I will say this, since they've gone to a new format with the target score at the end for the final quarter and they break it up by winning by quarters so you can get money for different charities, is that it's usually pretty tight at the end to where that is pretty dramatic. Anthony Davis hit a free throw. But it was funny, it was going in the fourth quarter, they said second foul of the game was called. It was a fourth quarter. The second foul of the game was called. I started laughing. I'm like, yeah, there's really no need for the refs to even be there, to be quite honest with you. They're getting the easiest paycheck of all and not getting criticized at all either. It's the only, probably the only game you got to worry about not being criticized is being the NFL ref at Pro Bowl and, of course, being the NBA ref in the All-Star game. That's the best two gigs you can get as a ref. I'm sure they get paid pretty handsomely for all that. So the All-Star weekend is done in the NBA, and Steph Curry going nuts. 16 threes, he had 50 points. He was trying to get the record in the fourth quarter. Had three or four shots at it, couldn't finish. And his best shot, I thought, was his floater on the baseline. That was his only 2-point field goal. That was just amazing how high he shot that. And it just he was just playing games with people. And he's had a down year in regards to his shooting percentage. But he put on a show, 50 points. The record is 52 by Anthony Davis in the game. He had 50 last night. MVP, first time NBA All-Star game. They had the Kobe Bryant trophy. And so that was given to Steph Curry. So pretty cool stuff. All right. Local sports-wise, there's a lot of cool stuff. But before we get to that, let's tease everybody. KU, K-State, over the weekend, we'll recap that, hear from the coaches. Wichita State, I have no idea what the heck they were doing on defense at the end of that game. That was some of the worst defense I've ever seen at the end of a basketball game. Did you see that?
I saw the last sequence.
Did you see the defense?
Yeah.
Lack of?
Yeah.
That's brutal.
I saw like the last minute of the second overtime, and that's about all I saw.
The last play, when you hit a three to tie it with 5 seconds to go, you have plenty of time to set up your defense.
You're just standing around.
And then the guy that lost the guy that got the dunk was just, what was he doing? What was that kid doing? I have no idea what he was doing. Guarding the bench? I don't know what he was doing. It was horrific defense, and it cost Wichita State a win, a much-needed win against a top 15 team. So we'll talk more about that. And how about Juwan Howard throwing a punch, head coach of Michigan, after they lost to Wisconsin? We'll hear from both head coaches, Juwan Howard and Greg Gard, the head coach of Wisconsin. That's coming up in a little bit. And, of course, the Daytona 500, you already heard some of that as Austin Cindric wins the Daytona 500 in pretty exciting fashion. So we'll cover all that coming up in a little bit. But first, local sports, we got some area wrestlers that are qualified for state.
Yeah, 10 of them in 3-2-1A, and then 7 from Concordia qualified in Class 4A as well. So a lot of area wrestlers had great weekends. In 3-2-1A at the Hillsboro Regional, Brennan Walker at 195 pounds, Braden Burks at 220 for Beloit were both regional champions. And then Tate Kittle finished in second place at 170 pounds. So three from Beloit that make it to state. Coe Nielsen wrestles for Beloit during the regular season, but he wrestles for Rock Hills once you get to the postseason. So Andy Nemchak and his crew will actually have four at state as Nielsen qualified for Rock Hills at 106 pounds in a third-place finish there in Hillsboro on Saturday. Friday at Norton, Smith Center ends up qualifying six wrestlers for state. They had three second-place finishes at the Norton Regional. Bentley Montgomery at 138 pounds, Jake Kirchhoff at 182, and Eli Franklin at 220 pounds, all qualifying for state for the Redmen. Alex Wilkinson at 145 finished in third place. Andrew Wilkinson at 132 and Jason Dabian at 170 both finished in fourth place. So those are your state qualifiers from the area at 3-2-1A over the weekend. Again, Concordia had seven state qualifiers. Kristen Belden at 106 as well as Daniel Vines at 126 and Kian Miller at 182 were all regional champions for Concordia and Abilene on Saturday. Other state qualifiers for the Panthers were Ashton Dooley, Logan Leisler, Nathan Brown, and Easton Swihart. So, again, seven of them for Concordia. 4A state wrestling is in Solana coming up Friday and Saturday. The 3-2-1A state wrestling tournament is in Hayes on Friday and Saturday. We'll have more information posted here this week at nckssports.com on all the state wrestling for the area qualifiers. So you can check out all the wrestlers from the NCKS Sports area that made it at nckssports.com for high school wrestling. So let's look at what happened over the weekend. We also had the sub-state brackets released for 1A basketball. 1A Division I at Sylvan Lucas was released on Saturday, and Osborne and Sylvan Lucas are the 1-2 seeds and have first-round buys. Lakeside's going to host Decatur Community at 6 o'clock on Thursday in the first round. And then Osborne girls have a first-round bye. Sylvan Lucas will host Stockton Friday at 7. Lakeside's at Decatur Community Friday at 6. 1A Division I, Rock Hills and Lincoln are in the Clifton Clyde substate, and Rock Hills actually at Lincoln 7 o'clock Thursday night in the boys' action. Rock Hills girls have a number 2 seed and have a first-round bye. Lincoln will be hosting Blue Valley Randolph at 7 o'clock on Friday night. Girls first round of 1A Division I. Then 1A Division II will be hosted by St. John's Tipton. The games will be at Beloit High School for the semis and finals. Again, first round at top seed. St. John's Tipton, number 4 seed, is hosting Pike Valley, the 5 at 7 o'clock Thursday in boys action. And then Friday will be the games for Thunder Ridge and Natoma because it's a doubleheader. Thunder Ridge boys will host Natoma at 7:30. The night will start Friday with Thunder Ridge 3 seed against Natoma, the 6 seed on the girls' side at 6 o'clock. St. John's Tipton does have a first-round bye on the girls' side there in 1A Division II. We just went through the area matchups because it would take quite a long time to go through all of those sub-state brackets for 1A. So you can find everything you need to know about that, and they are all posted at nckssports.com for sub-state and Class 1A for high school hoops. 2A, 3A, 4A, or 2A, 3A anyway, will both come out coming up on Wednesday with sub-state brackets after they finish the games. Coming up here tomorrow night for most of the area teams that will be finishing out their regular seasons tomorrow. So all the information for sub-state basketball also at nckssports.com.
All right, we'll figure out our broadcast schedule, what we're going to do coming up on Thursday and Friday, let people know that. Tomorrow night, Beloit at Smith Center, girls and boys doubleheader, starting about 6 o'clock, pregame at 5:50 on Katy Country 94 and katycountry94.com. We'll have wrestling locker room chats again tomorrow at 5:15, and then the basketball locker room chats on Wednesdays and Thursdays. Hard to believe, but basketball substate is here for 1A this week, starting. Yep. And then next week we'll have substate all the way through, and then we'll get into state. And, of course, state wrestling, we'll have full coverage of that with reports coming up on Friday and Saturday. Thanks to our sponsors making that possible. Over the weekend, KU able to go down to Morgantown, a place where they've had some problems since West Virginia joined the Big 12, but not this time.
I'm laughing because Wilson's still talking about the travel call. Here's a lob and a two-hand slam. David McCormick rocks the rim on an alley-oop feed from Christian Brown.
KU wins 71-58. It was 9-9 to go on 11-0 run. And really, honestly, they should have been up by 20 at halftime. They shot the ball well, out-rebounded West Virginia by a ton. But yet, at halftime, only up 6. In the second half, it got down to 3. But KU still was able to hold them at bay. Jayhawks ranked 6th in the country, 22-4 overall, 11-2 in the Big 12 with the win. West Virginia last place in the Big 12. Ochai Agbaji with 23 points. David McCormick, 19 points, 11 rebounds. KU is a different team, as we've stated many times before, when David McCormick is aggressive, and he was at West Virginia. And Bill Self notes the rebounding of his team.
You can't run unless you rebound. So there were some times that we did do a good job of rebounding. You know, we didn't run off our defense per se because we only had 5 steals, and they didn't turn it over, but we had 4 steals. They turned over only 5 times. But defensive rebounding, I thought we did a pretty good job all night long. And I thought Jalen, even though CB and David got defensive rebounds, I thought Jalen got the hardest defensive rebounds. I thought he was really good.
Supported largely by 9 quad 1 wins, tied for the most in NCAA Division I, KU's in position to land a number 1 seed in the upcoming NCAA tournament. That was the message handed out by the tournament selection committee on Saturday, as it revealed a sneak peek at the top 16 teams in the bracket for the 6th year in a row, and KU would be a number 1 seed in the East. And Auburn was going to be a number one seed, and then they lost after that reveal, by the way. Did Auburn to Florida. And then Baylor would be the top two seed, and Kentucky would be in the KU region as a two seed. And you'd be saying, well, wait a minute, why would KU be ahead of Kentucky? Kentucky whipped KU head-to-head. And that's true, and I think you could lend argument to that. But they look at the whole resume, and KU's got more quadrant one wins than Kentucky. So as of now, and of course Gonzaga would be the number one overall seed if the season ended today. So we'll continue to see. Arizona would be a number one seed as well. Those are the four that were revealed. Purdue would have been a two. So long way to go yet. Well, not a long way, but a few weeks to go before we determine the seeding from the NCAA tournament. Of course, tomorrow KU will host K-State at Allen Fieldhouse, 8 o'clock on Z96.3 Lake, your home for the Jayhawks in North Central Kansas. And speaking about the Wildcats, who will go to Lawrence tomorrow night, as we just mentioned, they were on the road at Stillwater. And this is one of those games where you kind of felt like this is a game K-State should win, but they probably won't. I mean, I think we talked about it Friday. Like, this is a game they need to win. They should win, but they probably won't. And they didn't. Sophomore Avery Anderson hit a three-pointer with 3.8 seconds to go in overtime. Oklahoma State wins after K-State had beat Oklahoma State by three on a similar situation when Nigel Pack hit a deep three to get the win. The first time around, former Jayhawk Bryce Thompson had 23 points. He was fantastic. Four players in double figures for K-State. Marquise Nolan, Nigel Pack with 16. Mark Smith, another double-double, 15 points and 10 rebounds. Mike McGurl added 14. But another heartbreaking loss for K-State. They are 6-8 in the Big 12, 14-12 overall. That was their 10th game this season decided at 5 or less. Five of the Wildcats' 8 Big 12 losses have come by one possession. They have now led or been tied in the second half in 6 of those 8 conference losses. Bruce Weber, head coach of K-State, just gives credit where credit is due to Oklahoma State playing well.
They have a lot of talent. Obviously, I've told Mike he's done a good job of keeping them engaged. It kind of seems like they come and go, you know, but this game, they were engaged. They have many guys step up and have a lot of career highs from Bryce Thompson. Avery hits the big shot at the end. Woody Newton comes in, makes shots. Bryce Williams, 8 assists. Walker, 7 rebounds. All career highs for them, or season highs, whatever. Look at their stats, 51%, 40 from 3. And you wonder how the heck we're in the game. And I think it shows a lot about our guys.
Okay, so let's talk about this for a second. I think I know where Dusty's going to go with this, but I'm going to give him the opportunity anyway. K-State is a bubble team. And right now, they would not be in the tournament. They got work to do. And it would have helped if they won Oklahoma State. But as I said on Friday, lose Oklahoma State, but go to Lawrence and win. That's the better equation. You win Oklahoma State, lose at Lawrence. Oklahoma State's not a marquee win. You have a bad loss at Oklahoma State? Okay, fine. But you turn around, you win in Lawrence, or you go to Texas Tech and beat Texas Tech, who swept Baylor, and you sweep Texas Tech. That puts something on your mantle, your resume. Having said all this, KU has been a lot of close games this year, and KU hasn't won all the close games, but they've won majority of those close games.
They've only lost 2 conference games.
They've only lost 2 conference
and 4
games.
4 overall, so they've won a majority of those.
They've beaten K-State by 3 in a close game when they were down by 17 or 16, whatever it was. They won a one-point game against Iowa State at home. They won a two-point game against Oklahoma at home, a three-point game on the road at Oklahoma. They blew out Baylor. But the point is that Texas was the one close loss that they had, 79-76. That was a game they didn't close out. But the law of averages are you're not going to close out every single game. So KU, the point I'm trying to make is KU's had a lot of close games. They've won more than they lose, obviously. K-State's got a lot of close games, and they lose more than good teams should. Agree?
100%. That's so we've been talking about that since the beginning of the year, right?
Sure.
It's like, you know, against the Marquettes of the world, against, you know, they had 2 or 3 close losses against non-con opponents that they very easily could have won and couldn't finish and didn't win. And some of that's at home, some of that's on the road or neutral. You know, you felt maybe they had turned a corner when they won against Wichita State and could figure out how to actually win those close games at the end. But then it started Big 12 play. You know, they had the COVID issues and things like that, and they just they didn't finish some of those games, even though they had big leads. One of them against West Virginia, they couldn't finish. And I know, like I said, they were shorthanded, but they had a big lead in that game. You still got to finish that. And that's kind of what we've talked about with this team is if you're a really good team, you're going to figure out ways to win those games at the end, especially if you're a tournament team, right?
Right.
If you have this dream and aspiration of making it to the NCAA tournament, those are games you have to win. Mm-hmm. You've got to be able to finish. You got to be able to come up with better sets on out of bounds plays with five or less seconds left in the end of games too. Mm-hmm. If you're trying to win these games,
right.
So they actually maybe a little bit better this time at Oklahoma State. They just kid made a play defensively, and K-State couldn't get the shot they wanted at the end of regulation. But you know, it's just like a broken record when you're watching this team play in close games, and they've lost more than they've won, we'll say that, on close games, and that's not the definition of a tournament team. And that's why when you asked me, I think about a week ago, is K-State a tournament mm-hmm. team? I said no. Mm-hmm. They don't look like one because mm-hmm. that's why. They can't finish these kind of games that they need to win. If they'd have won the majority of these games, then they're probably not on the bubble right now. They're mm-hmm. in. If they can win the – and we're going all the way back to the non-con games, not just the Big 12 mm-hmm. games. But, you know, their amount of single-digit, one-possession losses is not what you want
no.
if you're a tournament team. Well, you can't have if you're,
no,
if you
can't.
Think you're a tournament team.
You can't. So let's look at KU first. So I just pulled this up. In games decided by five or less, KU is 5-2.
Yeah.
And in conference play, they're 5-1.
Mm-hmm.
They lost to David.
I know they didn't have a lot of them in non-conference.
They had the Dayton game where they yeah. lost on that fluke shot. I mean, that was a pure lucky shot. Of course, if KU makes free throws, don't turn the ball over, they would have won that game. So that's their own fault
mm-hmm.
In Orlando. So that was a non-con, loss by one. They didn't have any 5 points or less game in non-con except for the Dayton game. But then once they got into conference play, KU beat Iowa State by one at home, beat Oklahoma by three on the road, came back and beat K-State and Manhattan on the road, won at home in double overtime by three over Texas Tech. Lost by three at Texas. That's the one boo-boo. Then they turn around and beat Oklahoma by two at home. KU leads this conference 11-2. They're 5-1 in games decided by 5 points or less. Okay? You're going to see the connection here very quickly, mm-hmm. I believe. For K-State, meanwhile, let's look at their games decided by five or less. Lost to Marquette. You want to help me out and keep
yep.
track of this? And we'll go non-con in conference. So Marquette lost by one. Okay, so now we're in the Big 12. So they're 0-1 just like KU in the non-con in 5 points, games decided by five or less. In the conference, they open the season at Oklahoma, lost by two. Went to West Virginia, lost by three. They were shorthanded but had a 17-point lead in that game. So lost by three. Very next game, TCU, they completely botched that game. They had that one. They lost mm-hmm. by three at home. Then they won at Texas by one, so there's a win. Lost to KU by three. Had that game in control. Couldn't hold on to it. Won against Oklahoma State at home by three on the Nigel Pack three-pointer. And won against West Virginia by five recently. And they lost Oklahoma State in overtime by three. So what's their record?
3-6.
3-6, and that's counting the non-con or the con.
3-6 overall. 3-5 conference.
Okay, that's what I want. Okay, yeah. So 3-5. So K-State's 3-5 in 5 point games or less in the Big 12, and KU is 5-1. And K-State's sitting here at 6-8 in the conference, and KU is 11-2.
Yeah,
that's a 5-game difference in the standings. If KU goes 3-3 and K-State goes 5-3, obviously they're pretty tight, aren't they? So what usually happens year in and year out is teams that can find a way to win on the road hold serve at home and steal some games on the road, and KU does that almost every single year. But also, KU usually finds a way to win tight games. And K-State, they've had all kinds of opportunities. And you know, we got the one that I didn't count. They won by six in overtime at Iowa State and had one of the worst possessions you'll ever see at the end of regulation, but they pulled that one out,
mm-hmm.
but they won by six, so it doesn't count for 5 points or less if you're filling that category. No, that was a good win. That was
maybe
a tight
Wichita
game.
Wichita State by six, too. Was yeah. that the final on that one?
I can't,
because I was thinking that one was came down
been.
The wire. But
might have been. I don't have it here in front of
yeah.
me. I'm trying to scroll through and see. For some reason, I don't see it on there. Oh, there it is. They won by six, yes.
Yeah.
But the conference games are the biggest thing because that's what they're really being judged on. Yeah. And they had another close loss. And the other thing, too, is they've led or been tied in the second half in six of their eight conference losses. So they're not finishing games.
Yeah.
I mean, you had a 17-point lead, I believe it was, against West Virginia. Yeah. And I know they were shorthanded without coaches and players, but still, if you could get up 17, you should be able to finish it.
In the end, that doesn't matter.
It shouldn't. You're up, 16 on KU at home, and Nigel Pack has a game of his life and still can't win that game. I mean, that's a game that there's no doubt K-State. That would look. Think about this. If K-State didn't blow that game against KU in Bramlage, they're probably right there squarely on the bubble. Now on the outside looking in, that's a marquee win against the top 10 team in the country. Instead, they blew that opportunity. I mean, KU came back and played great second half. Don't get me wrong. But, I mean, you're up 16 at home. You can't lose those games against anybody.
No.
So K-State is what they are, and K-State is where they should be. And that's on the outside looking in because they've had all these chances. But you've got to win more than – you got to do better than 3-5 in games decided by 5 or less in conference if you're going to make the tournament. More than likely, you're going to have to do better than that. You're going to have to probably be at least 500 in those types of games. And maybe by the end of the year, K-State will be. But if they're going to make the tournament, K-State now, I believe, they're going to have to win – I think they're going to have to win 3 of the last 4. I think they're going to – I think – I disagree with people saying they can go 8-10 and make it. I look at their non-con. It wasn't good. So I think K-State personally needs to win 3 of their last 4. That means they got to hold serve against Iowa State at home. They got to beat Oklahoma at home. And those are far from guarantees. At KU, nobody's going to pick them to win tomorrow night. But, you know, that might be close. They might be able to steal one. Who knows? And then at Texas Tech, and Tech's kind of a weird team. I mean, they play the best really well, and Tech's lost by 11 at K-State, which was unexplainable. So can K-State win 3 of the last 4? Or maybe they can go 8-10, but then they got to win 2 in the Big 12 tournament. But I think they've got more work to do than what some people are saying. Like Kelce Robinette's reporting that, well, they still just need to win 3 games between now and tournament selection day. So, but what he's saying is you go 2-2, and then you win 1 game in the Big 12 tournament. Or you go 3-1, even if you lose the first round of the Big 12 tournament. I don't know, man. I just think what's going to happen, and this happens every single year, the bubble shrinks. And you can't be a team that's one of the last four in. If you're one of the last four in, odds are 2 or 3 of those teams are going to get bumped out. So if you really want to solidify getting into this tournament, K-State, to me, has to win 3 of their next 4, and that means they got to steal one at Lawrence or in Lubbock. And I think most people would say that's probably not going to happen, but this K-State team's hard to figure out.
Yeah, they
nobody saw them getting a 16-point lead against KU in Bramlage.
No, I think that's probably the biggest thing that you'd say. Mm-hmm. The two biggest things that you would say this K-State team's hard to figure out is when they beat Texas Tech, and then
they went to Texas and won.
Yeah, Texas is Texas. I mean, they're not had the big lead on Kansas, right? Mm-hmm. Beat Texas Tech, had the big lead on Kansas. Those are the things that you know this team is actually probably better than what their record shows, but they can't be consistent with it.
Absolutely.
Those are those games that you look at. Texas, they competed with strong the first time they played them, and then they lost that one close, and then they won at Texas. So, mm-hmm. I mean, those are two games where they were right with Texas both times, you know, and probably maybe could have, should have won both games, whatever you want to look at with that. With Texas, I mean, they ended up losing by 13 the first time they played Texas, but it was a close game, you know, early in the first half. But and again, a game where they were kind of at the start of their COVID issues. So, you know, you just those games are games that you expect them maybe to be close in, but you don't expect them to beat Texas Tech after they had just lost to TCU in a heartbreaking fashion at home. You know, and you don't expect them to even play with Kansas the way they lose close games in the end, and so they're up by, you know, 16, whatever it was. And then you just like, but then when you really look at their schedule, they, like you said, they are what they are. They didn't win that game against Kansas. It still goes in as a loss. Really, the only marquee thing that's on their schedule is the win against Texas Tech, if you really think about it. And if you go, maybe if you go win at Lubbock and you get a sweep over Texas Tech, that's definitely going to help your resume. The only games they can, if they go 2-2 in these last 4 games and lose to both Kansas and Texas Tech, that doesn't help them even a little bit.
I agree.
Not at all does it help them.
I agree.
And so I don't agree with Kelce at all on that. If you go 2-2 and win one of the games in the Big 12 tournament. Now, if you go 2-2 against Texas Tech and Kansas and lose the other 2 games, even though it's crazy to think that you just lost the 2 teams you probably shouldn't lose to in Iowa State and Oklahoma at home, but that's still better for your resume.
It is.
And so it's just like, I, you know, those are two games they should win, Iowa State and Oklahoma, but they're two games on the road that they should lose, and this, you're just at the same place you are right now, I feel like, if you go 2-2 and lose, well, both of those games on the road to KU and Tech.
I'm not able to compare resumes to everybody else.
That's the hard thing, too, is it's a different year this year than some years in the past, and you just never know. But
I don't think the quality is that great from after the top. I mean, honestly, I think there's a tier of 8 to 10 teams, and then after that, I think there's a drop-off. But anybody can be anybody in a tournament in a one-game setting. But if K-State goes 2-2 in their final four, and I think most people think they're going to go 2-2, and most people think they're going to win the two home games, lose the two road games. Mm-hmm. But let's say it's any combination. Let's say they steal one against Tech, but they lose to Oklahoma on senior day. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Their overall record is 16-14. Their Big 12 record is a losing record at 8-10. So then, usually, when you, and it seems, and maybe things are different this year. The whole metrics and how they're evaluating things, maybe I'm just not up to date on 2022 NCAA Tournament Selection Committee ways of doing things. But if you're 16-14, that usually means that if you're going to get in with that many losses, you've got to have a couple of really good non-con wins or a good non-con schedule. Who the heck is K-State beating in a non-con? I mean, I'm looking at this. Beat Florida A&M, nothing. Beat Omaha, nothing. Lost to Arkansas, who's ranked in the top 25, but you lost. Lost to Illinois, who's in top 25, but you lost. You beat North Dakota, no help. Albany, no help. Wichita State's no help. Your win at Wichita State doesn't do you any good right now because Wichita State can't find ways to win games. You lost Marquette. That's not a – honestly, that's not a good loss either. At the time, you thought it could be a good win. Green Bay doesn't help you. Nebraska's horrible. McNeese State's no good. That's – I mean, you got nothing in non-con is my point. Your best non-con win is Wichita State. That is your best non-con win. And Wichita State, we're going to get to them in a little bit, are not having a good year in the American Athletic Conference. So – to me, when it comes down to if you're 16-14, you're—I mean, I don't think you're getting in tournament 16-15. So if you're 2-2, you got to win a Big 12 tournament game. But then, if you don't win the tournament, that means you lose one. So that means you're 17-15. I don't think K-State at 17-15 is making the tournament. I don't think K-State at 16-14 make the tournament. I just don't see K-State. I mean, do you see a path where K-State's going to have less than 14 losses going into the NCAA tournament? Because I think we're assuming K-State's not going to win the Big 12 tournament, so that means there's a loss there. So that's 13 losses. And I don't think that we think they're going to win their final four games of regular season, so they're going to lose at least one. At KU, at Texas Tech, home Iowa State, home Oklahoma. I think that's being optimistic if you say K-State's going to go 3-1 in the final four. But let's go ahead and assume it. Let's just assume K-State steals one, and so they get three wins. So they're 9-9 in conference. Okay, that's great. But their overall record would be 17-13. And then they get a win in the Big 12, 18-13, then lose in the semis, 18-14. Is that still enough to get them in? Some people say it is. I don't know, man. I see lots of teams that get in with, not lots of teams, but teams that get in with 12, 13, 14 losses seem to be, to me, more of the brand products. And K-State's not a brand when it comes to men's basketball. So you can get in on all the politics of all that as well. And I'm not saying that K-State isn't worthy of being in the tournament if the field is down and K-State's the 66th best team out of 68, then yeah, they should be in. But, man, 14, 15 losses with no good marquee non-conference wins, I just don't – I'm not sold that K-State's as close to getting in as people are talking.
I never have been.
I can't buy it.
You know, and I just –
you've got one marquee win. That's Texas Tech.
Well, and you wait until – the thing that people don't ever, ever factor in when you're talking about this part of it is, what if Iowa State gets on a hot streak and wins the Big 12 tournament?
That bumps
K-State right out, right?
Well, it might not still bid. They've got Iowa State as a 9 seed because they got so many good quadrant one wins.
Yeah, and that's what's crazy about it, too, is like Iowa State's second to last in the Big 12 right now. So let's say West Virginia gets hot and wins the Big 12 tournament.
Well, like right now, Iowa State's 18-9. K-State's 14-12. Yeah. So Iowa State did much, and they had a couple of good marquee non-conference
wins. They did have some good wins in non-con.
They did great in the non-con. K-State had losses. We talked about Marquette and others. And they're 5-9. K-State's 6-8. So it's not like Iowa State's way behind K-State. They're a game back. And if they beat K-State head-to-head,
they
need to tie that. There'd be no tiebreaker where K-State swept the season series. So Iowa State, honestly, they're not stealing a bid right now. But West Virginia Oklahoma or West Virginia would be your better example.
Yeah.
And listen, Oklahoma's capable of making a run.
Yeah. And that's just in the Big 12. But there's
right.
And I brought that up because that's the Big 12. But what I'm also saying is, if Vanderbilt wins the SEC, that's just an example, right? Somebody that's not supposed to make the
tournament goes through and wins it. Michigan is on the bubble right now. We'll get to Michigan and how they're coached through a punch. Michigan was top 10 to start the year preseason poll. Right now, they're on the outside looking in. But if they're good enough, they're talented enough, they win the Big Ten tournament, that steals a bid from a team on the bubble, which would be a K-State.
Yeah, so you can't always – like, I hate doing the whole, if I finish 2-2 here, I'm trying to figure all that out with a bubble team, right? Like, if I know that they're in, then I'm fine, right? You know, whoever wins wherever can win wherever. It doesn't really matter. You know, we've had a lot of years where that's the case, right? But this is not the case this year, and when you're on that bubble – there's a lot of things that can go wrong for you despite what you think K-State needs to do at the end of the year.
I agree with
you. And so if you go 2-2 and lose to Kansas and Texas Tech and don't get the resume-building wins, and quad one, quad two, whatever, I don't care, right? You're still going to be judged on winning at Kansas and Texas Tech more than whatever the quad says, whatever the number says on next to that team that you're beating. So it's just, I don't know. I have the net rankings pulled up right now. K-State's 4-10 in quad one games, so that can't be good for their resume.
Yeah. And why is KU
4 wins maybe is good.
Why is KU 1?
Because they're 10-3 in quad
one.
After this weekend,
that's
they're 10-3 in quad one games now.
Which is crazy because West Virginia is considered a quad one win.
Yeah, because
and
it was on the road.
In the Big 12.
Yeah. It's weird how the quads differ on the net rankings if you're at home, neutral, or away.
Right. Like Iowa State's a quad one win.
If you beat a 1-30 net, that's a quad one win at home. 1-50 neutral, 1-75 net ranking on the road is a quad one win.
Right. And K-State won at Iowa State, and that was a quad one win.
That was a quad one win, yeah.
It is interesting.
And it's like all that's crazy to me, but
listen, this is
look
just
at the eye test. K-State is not a tournament team.
Listen, this is what I've thought all along. I don't think K-State's a tournament team. I don't think K-State's getting into the tournament. Unless they get hot, win 3 out of 4, and then make a run to, I think, the Big 12 title game. I think they got a ton of work to do. I am not buying what people are trying to sell me when they tell me K-State is right close to, you know, if they just would, they go 3-1 here at the end of the season, they're going to be in. Dude, they're going to still have to do work in a Big 12 tournament. And every year people misread the situation based on what you just said. They forget about what happens when there are tournament bids stolen by other conferences. And it happens every year. And they don't factor that in. The bubble is based on assuming the favorites win the tournaments. Yeah. That's how the bubbles are figured. They're not
that
guessing.
That bubble change is starting about the first week of March when these conference tournaments start up.
Right.
And somebody gets knocked off. But, hey, they're still good enough to be in the field.
Right.
But this team has to take their automatic bid.
Right. Right, and Joe Lunardi doesn't forecast, you know, a 4 seed winning a conference tournament.
No,
and that takes away a bid. Yeah. So that's
number 5 seed runs through the SoCon, and now you're confident.
And it happens every year.
Maybe the SoCon has a team that's lost now 2 games all year and still gets the bid.
Can they get a bid? Yeah, absolutely. So we'll see how it plays out, but there's no doubt KU's won the close games. They're 5-1 in the Big 12 and 5 points or less. K-State's 3-5, and you know, there it is. If K-State's 5-3, we're talking they're a tournament team right now. If they just have 2 of those
games,
listen, it's simple. If you hold on a win at West Virginia and against KU at home, you're a tournament team right now. You're not even on the bubble, I don't think. So, and you'd be 8-6 in the Big 12. You'd be 16-10 overall.
Yeah, if you're 16-10. I can believe that.
And
if
and
you win 2 of your last 4,
yeah,
and then 1 at the Big 12 tournament,
absolutely,
you're solidly in.
Yeah, because you'd be what you'd be is you'd be like 10-8 in the Big 12
13,
with a winning record in the Big 12 and a 19
yeah.
win season. And yeah, absolutely. So that's how close you can be, but not get in this tournament. All right, the Big 12 over the weekend. Baylor beat TCU 72-62. Texas Tech wins at Lubbock. This is funny. Texas Tech fans found a way to get the code to get tickets through Texas's website, apparently. And so the Texas Tech had half the place full of Texas Tech fans in Austin. And you could hear when Texas shot an airball 3 minutes ago, the crowd, it was pro Texas Tech, you know, an airball, and Texas fans left early. But remember, you know, we have football. Oh, no, wait, we've got men's basketball. And it just don't matter what sport it is, you're overrated, Texas. And don't sit here and tell me you're great at softball and men's rowing and whatever else. Congrats. You know where the proof in the pudding is. and you know where the money's at. And Texas lost to Texas Tech again. I think it's hilarious. Iowa State blew out Oklahoma in AM 75-54. Of course, O State over K-State in overtime, 82-79, and KU winning at West Virginia 71-58. Big Monday games tonight, West Virginia at TCU, and Baylor is at Oklahoma State. Oklahoma at Texas Tech tomorrow night, and K-State at Kansas on Z96.3 Lakewood pregame at 7:30. Wichita State. Well, they found a way to lose what was an exciting game yesterday.
Play through it here. Porter, Wichita State, down three. This is for the tie. He got it! Seconds remaining. Shed. Jamal Shed feeds inside Roberts. He throws it down for the Houston lead. 1.2 remaining. And it's Porter at the buzzer. The Cougars escape Wichita State.
Shockers lose in double overtime at home to number 14 Houston. 76-74. Shockers now 13-11 overall. They're 4-8 in AAC. They're not going to the tournament unless they steal a bid and win the American Athletic Conference, which would hurt teams like K-State and others like Michigan on the bubble. And if you saw the ending of this game, first of all, it was a really good game. You know, fun, exciting, lots of lead changes, so forth and so on. But as you just heard, Wichita State hit three and tied the game. And then by the time they got the ball and handed it, the official, to the inbounder, there was plenty of time Wichita State set up their full court defense. And they end up getting an easy slam dunk in 4 seconds. Go the length of the floor and got easy slam dunk. First of all, nobody stopped ball. I mean, they're just like the fundamentals that we taught second graders this year in Parks and Rec basketball. Stop the ball, see man and ball. That's like the top two things you can think of defensively, right? Stop ball and then see man and ball. If you're playing man-to-man, see man and ball. And on that play, first of all, nobody stopped the ball, so there's the penetration.
Yeah.
Secondly, the guy, I don't know who it was. I'd have to go back and look. I don't want to call out a name because I know they're college players. You know, I've talked about it. You know, a pro player going to be much more critical making all this money. You're supposed to get it right. But the kid's on scholarship. He was like out guarding a bench. I don't know what he was doing. I mean, he totally lost track of his man. He gets a dunk. Dude, you got to keep everything in front of you. How do you not keep everything in front of you? It's a tie game. You got to keep everything in front of you. It's simple. You keep everything in front of you. And that was the easiest game-winning dunk I think I've ever seen going the length of the floor.
Mm-hmm.
It was like NBA All-Star game type of defense, except this was a college game that Wichita State needed to win. And Isaac Brown, you know, we had a cut from him last week talking about his defense has to get better. But what let him down in that final play, here is he on that disappointing loss to Houston yesterday.
That was a tough one. I thought we were right there. We were getting stops. At the end, we just couldn't rebound. They kept getting second shots. Big boy stepped up and hit a three, making a play. I thought we had some crucial turnovers. We were up three. They went to the zone right there. We were really working out with our man offense, executing, getting layups, getting to the rim, getting free throws. He went to the zone. That kind of slowed us up a little bit, but we just couldn't close it out. Good basketball team. Give them all the credit.
So there are people saying Isaac Brown should have called a timeout, set up his defense. First of all, I think that's easy to say after the fact. Were you screaming when Houston took a while to get the ball, and then from the official, they tracked it down, they got it. I mean, Wichita State had plenty of time to set up their defense. To me, there was no need for a timeout. There was no need for a timeout because you're thinking you're probably going to triple overtime, and you can carry over that timeout. So to me, if your five guys can't get set and find who they're supposed to guard when there is about 5 to 10 seconds allowing you to set up, once they finally got the official got the ball hand to the Houston guy to throw it in the length of the court, I think if you're going to yell at Isaac Brown for he should have called a timeout instead of his defense, I think that's really you're looking at the wrong place. What you got to be looking at is this coaching in regards to the fundamentals of the game, because Wichita State's had problems with their defense lately. Isaac Brown's even talked about after games. We've played the clips on this show. Or is it just players not listening to their coaches, or is players not understanding the fundamentals? Whatever it is, he could have called a timeout, and I don't know if it would have been any different. Because if you don't know to stop ball, and if you don't know to, you know, stay with your man, and you lose the man while you're staring at the bench and the guy is right behind for an easy dunk, I mean, I don't know what a timeout does to solve that. Like, Wichita State should – I guarantee there's been thousands of times these players that Wichita State has and everybody else's teams, a thousand times in their careers, have been in situations like that and know to get back and find their man. I think it's pretty obvious. If you don't know how to do that by now, how are you on scholarship?
Mm-hmm.
So, in fairness to Isaac Brown, that's something the players – that's on the players. Now, I will say Isaac Brown sometimes does mismanage some things from what I've seen. Into game at times. Maybe his time out management's a little bit questionable. Obviously, we talked to Bruce Weber's time management. Not calling a timeout in Iowa State and getting a shot from the logo at the end of regulation. And Weber's been doing it a lot longer than Isaac Brown. And listen, coaching is not easy. And if you end up losing a close game, you always second-guess yourself. Should I call the timeout? Why did I call the timeout? Or I should have called the timeout. Or I should have had this guy on the lane, or I should have pulled everybody off the lane. I should have played zone. I should have mixed up my defense. I should have gone man. I should have had somebody else in there to rebound. I should have had a better foul shooter out there. I wasn't thinking. I left somebody on the bench I should have put in. You're always going to second guess yourself. So people can be critical of Isaac Brown, and I know they will be, because Greg Marshall won a lot more than Isaac Brown is now in regards to this year. Last year they won quite a bit. This year he's the head coach, and they're only 13-11, 4-8 in the conference. But I didn't see the whole game, in fairness, so I can't tell you if Isaac Brown made a whole bunch of tactical errors during this game. But I can tell you is the play that decided the game, which was the final play of the game, it was atrocious defense, and I don't even know if a timeout solves it. If those players don't know to stop ball and guard your man, see man and ball, then I don't know. Listen, Isaac Brown didn't get his job by not telling guys how to do fundamental stuff. So I understand people's angst towards Isaac Brown, but to me, at least on the final play of the game yesterday, that's on the players. That's not on Isaac Brown.
It has to be in the end. It has to be on the players, right? The place where the timeout would have helped was he could actually relay that, right?
But my point is you should already know that.
I get it.
If you don't know to stop the basketball, full court, keep everything ahead of you in a tie game, and you can't, for crying out loud, the guy that gets the dunk is open by 15 feet. The guy guarding him, I don't know what he was thinking. It was like NFL playoffs where you thought you were playing zone and you were playing man, and it was a blown coverage is what it was. I mean, what's the most important thing to do? Protect the lane. Protect the high-percentage shot. It's a tie game. Yeah, you want to guard the three. You don't give up a shot. I get it. But for crying out loud, now, granted, you could call a timeout and say, listen, guys, it's tied, because sometimes guys forget. Are we up one? Are we down one? Or whatever else.
I should have started with where I was actually going to start before you jumped in on that part of it.
Well, yeah, but that may be, if you're trying to explain to them, okay, listen, guys, it's tied. You want to re-stress, it's tied. The other thing, too, is, I don't know. Houston have a timeout left at the end of that?
I don't know if Houston did.
I don't think they did.
I don't think so.
Here's the thing, too. If you call timeout and see people are saying, well, he should have called timeout. Well, yeah, you know what happened. So you think Isaac Brown should call timeout. The other thing is you allow Houston to set up a play.
Yeah.
And the reason why Isaac Brown doesn't call a timeout there, and I thought he made the right decision. They got to scramble for 5 seconds, bring the ball up the floor. They'd have no set play called. And they can't sub in a guy they might want in that situation, a better shooter or penetrator or whatever. So you disallow them to sub. You also don't allow them to draw up a play. Now, granted, the flip side is I can set up my defense. I could put in a different sub defensively if I called a timeout. And I'm saying you're damned if you do and damned if you don't is the bottom line. But I personally feel like he's sitting here going, listen, we can defend him 5 seconds. It's double overtime. We get the timeout to carry over to triple overtime. We should get a stop here. And that timeout's going to be valuable to me in triple overtime. And some people might say, well, how can you look ahead to triple overtime when you're not out of double overtime? Well, it'd be different, obviously, if you're down two or something like that. But this was tied.
Yeah.
They had to go the length of the floor, and apparently Houston didn't have any timeouts left. I'd have to go back and look. So I understand the argument to call the timeout. I understand the argument to not call the timeout. But in regards to if you got to tell your kids, guard, stop ball and see man and ball, and that's the reason you call a timeout, then you got a bigger problem on your team than calling timeouts at certain moments of time. Now, if you want to reset the situation and say, listen, guys, I want to just make sure you know, they don't have any timeouts. Let's deny the inbounds and try to make it hard for them to bring up the floor, and we are tied, all right? Don't foul. I mean, I understand that.
It's the reverse of the point. I was going to make is that I want to say before I say that you can set it up, is that I saw an angle that Sully Ingles had. He does TV down in Wichita. Mm-hmm. And he had a video on Twitter just from the baseline from where Porter made the shot, right? Mm-hmm. From that baseline in the near corner, they're inbounding in the far corner. on the play. And you can see, literally, after that shot goes in, that euphoria. You can watch it on the regular
they're excited.
Part, too. The euphoria. But it almost looks like they're all turning around and ready to go to the bench for a timeout. And I think it's something that they anticipated, that they thought there was going to be a timeout call, because you can see all those guys, even on the baseline for Wichita State, just kind of slow, lackadaisical, turning around like there's going to be a timeout, like they're about ready to head to the bench. And then they realize, oh, no, they're not calling a timeout, they're going. Mm-hmm. And by that little split-second decision of you being happy and excited about that shot going in, and then for some reason most of your team in anticipation that you might be calling a timeout here and kind of turning around and just kind of just letting up for a half a second or a second, you've lost the advantage that you have. So in my mind, I'm thinking, if I'm Isaac Brown, now that I know that, I could have called the timeout and said, hey, we were not going to take, like, didn't want to use this timeout, but I needed to because you guys basically stopped. And that's what it looks like, that the defense just stopped. They got excited, and they just kind of turned around for the brief part of time that it took for Houston to get that ball in and go down the floor and score. Obviously, it only took 4 seconds for them to do all of that. Mm-hmm. So if you pause for a half a second, a full second, from that, it was like, oh, these guys were clearly not ready for anything on an inbound play, for anything that Houston was about ready to bring to them.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and so that's the only reason I say, like, if I'm Isaac Brown, I'm like, whoa, these guys are way, but you don't have time to process all that either in 3 seconds.
Right. And that's the thing, too, is
it's hindsight in the end that we're talking about.
And now, listen, if Isaac Brown told the team, we tie the game, I'm calling a timeout, then that's on him.
Yeah.
That's on him.
And he could have done that, and maybe they felt that way, too.
Right.
Or maybe it's something they practice on and say, down three, we tie it with.
Right.
How much time left? We're probably going to call a timeout, or, you know, whatever your philosophy is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the other thing, too, I think that made it a little bit interesting. And I'm going to pull it up here, and I'm going to watch this. Okay, so there's the shot. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. It took, okay, so and we don't know this. You'd have to ask Isaac Brown this. But it took 9 seconds for the ball to be collected by Houston, throw it to the official. And so if Isaac Brown had told his team, I'm going to call a timeout, and then he saw how much time it was taking, he might have been directing his defense, like, hey, I'm not calling it, you know, set up, because he had more time to set up his defense so that he could save the timeout for triple overtime.
I
think you can logically say he could have been thinking something like that. He might originally was planning on calling a timeout. Maybe he told them he was taking a timeout, and then all of a sudden, and remember, he's a rookie head coach. I mean, he was interim last year, and being one seat down as an assistant is completely different to being on the hot seat as a head coach. So he might have changed his mind right in midstream when he saw that ball bouncing forever and saw his guys all get back to half court, even after they celebrated, and it's here on the replay, that he probably thought, you know what, I can save the timeout. I can save the timeout. And I'm pulling it up again. I'm going to play it again real quick. So the ball's rolling in the lane. Houston's taking plenty of time, and Houston's scrambling themselves. So it's not just Wichita State. Wichita State now defensively, oh, my goodness gracious, they've got three guys trying to stop ball, and yet the guy goes right through all three of them. So nobody can stop the ball. And then the guy that's guarding the guy on the wing flat out just I don't know what he's doing. And the guy – for Houston, flashes to the bucket, basically a backdoor cut, has an easy jam. It was horrific defense. In hindsight, you can say that they should have called a timeout. I don't know if the defense would have been better had he called a timeout. But I do wonder out loud, after watching that replay a third time now, it took them almost a full 10 seconds, Houston, to get the ball in the lane, and they took their sweet time to get it, which they probably get in some directions from the coach about something real quick.
Yeah.
Because Houston, it appears, let me see here, I'll pull this up if they had a timeout or not. Oh, they did have a timeout. Houston had a timeout and didn't call it.
Well, and that's probably might have been what was going on, is Samson's just yelling at the guys out there on the court while they're, you know, letting the ball just roll a little
bit. Maybe that's why he didn't call a timeout.
He probably has a play that he's already told his guy, hey, do this.
Yeah.
That he's running down the court, but it just looked all.
Or maybe Wichita State's anticipating Houston calling a timeout.
Could be that too, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was all discombobulated for Wichita State. The moment that three-pointer went in, it was just like they don't know where they're at and what they're supposed to do here.
Oh, my goodness. This is
because, again, at first it was like they all turned around. It felt like from the baseline angle I saw, like, oh, we're probably going to go to the bench here. And then they didn't. And then all that stuff is happening. And then, and I don't know if Isaac Brown's trying to yell at them from the bench and tell them what to do defensively or not. But it's, it just looked really, really bad.
Well, you got a big guy. You got two big guys, Wichita State, that are way beyond the 3-point line, trying to slow down a small point guard. So he gets through both those guys, and then, like I said, the guy on the wing, near the bench, he comes over, like, he doesn't even come over. He just jumps straight in the air where he's standing. Like, what are you going to stop them from do? Throw the ball to the corner where there's nobody there? He totally loses track of his man, and the guy just simply jogs to the goal for a dunk. It's horrendous defense. It's horrendous defense. And another example of why Wichita State's not going to be in the tournament. You can't lose games like that. You're at home against a top 15 team. There's a chance for a marquee win. You got to be better than that. You just do. And whether you want to blame the players, you want to blame the coach for not calling the timeout, it was a unique situation. You hit the three. Houston had plenty of time to find the ball and take their time to get it in, which I say had plenty of time to set up their defense. I can see why both coaches didn't call a timeout, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. I can see that, for sure. But as far as the way the players react, there's going to be different. And maybe they – another thing is Wichita State maybe thought Houston was taking a timeout because they weren't all that rushing towards the ball to get it in and stuff like that. That might have slowed them down. But that happens a lot in the end of these kind of games where a team that – and has a last chance here, will kind of gather, even if they don't take a timeout, they'll kind of gather their thoughts, process it, let that ball kind of roll whenever you need. You got to get it in within 5 seconds once it's in the baseline area, you know. And so you've got time to kind of think, and sometimes that's why you don't call the timeout, is because you trust your guys are going to make good thought process and not rush things in the end.
Every coach has a different philosophy. Some will automatically call a timeout there if they've got it to set up their defense. Some will automatically call a timeout to get the ball for offense. A lot of times, though, on offense in those situations, you want to just go ahead and get the ball in at least and advance it somehow and then maybe call a timeout because it's hard to get the ball in. You got 5 seconds to go. And so that's another reason why you could say, which I say call a timeout, is it's hard to go the length of the floor in a tie or down two or down three if you got to go against – you know, full court pressure, basically, is what I'm saying. You have somebody come and pick up the ball, try to deny a pass in a little bit, make them labor to bring it up the floor. There really wasn't a lot of laboring bringing the ball up the floor for Houston, and maybe that's, you know, and I would listen to that argument. That's why I should have called the timeout. I guess my thing is, if you're watching the game, and as soon as you made a three-pointer and you know Wichita State has a timeout, are you at home before Houston gets the dunk? Are you saying timeout? If you're saying timeout, then I'm totally with you. I understand your argument. You're playing just like a coach. You're understanding it. If you're one of those fans that you didn't have any problem with them not calling a timeout, and you're actually thinking, well, that's good, we can save our timeout, triple overtime, and then you lose on a dunk, and then you criticize Isaac Brown, well, that's being hypocritical because you weren't fully, you know, you really hadn't made your decision either. So you expect a coach to make that decision, but you sitting on your couch couldn't make that decision. I've talked about that many times. Sometimes you can see things happening and you're saying to yourself, you know, you should do it. Like the Chiefs, we should run the ball again here, all right, in the situation with a chance to, you know, win the game against the Bengals. And we say these things ahead of time. It's not after the fact when the play doesn't work. And so anyway, that's a tough loss for the Shockers, no doubt.
For sure.
K-State women, they beat Oklahoma State 56-38. It was 22-6 at halftime. Oklahoma State, a Division I Big 12 team, had 6 points at halftime.
Everybody was talking about the six, and I'm watching, you know, sporadically. I didn't watch the whole thing 100%, but I'm sitting here. They should be up by at least 30 by now if they held them to six, and they were only up 22-6 at half.
It wasn't pretty. It was the KAL game, as they called it, you know, the wear pink, and, of course, Shannon Mitty, Jeff Mitty's wife 5 weeks ago, breast cancer. They feel she'll be able to beat it. They found it soon enough, so forth and so on. But I was interested in comments by Jeff Mitty afterwards going, you know, it hits home even more now, obviously, and the team won. So they're 18-8, 8-6 in the Big 12. The KU women's basketball team was down 13 on the road at Lubbock to Texas Tech. They came back and won. KU now women are 19-5, 10-4 in the Big 12. They won their seventh consecutive Big 12 game for the first time since 1997. And now they have a very good chance of being ranked in the new poll today when it's released, which would be the first time they'd be ranked since 2013. So Brandon Schneider, what he's done at KU with the women's program is pretty impressive.
Yeah, and it was like a quick turnaround this year because like he has not had a lot of success in his like sixth or seventh year, maybe even more than that. I don't know, but his overall record is not good at all.
Not at all.
But they've had a quick turnaround this year for sure.
Not at all. We'll go to Daytona 500 next, where rookie Austin Cindric is the 2022 Daytona 500 champion.
Bring them to the line way up high to block Ryan Blaney. And at the line, Cindric beats Bubba Wallace by half a car length, and they crash going into turn one. And David Ragan found one he couldn't miss.
Austin Cindric, the winner of the Daytona 500.
It was only a couple years ago. Cindric was as raw a NASCAR rookie as they came. He had come up the ranks as a highly proficient road course racer, went through a long feeling out process trying to figure out how to be fast on the oval tracks, and then things clicked, and now he is a Daytona 500 champion. Got some help with Ryan Blaney, as you heard there, able to fend off three different challengers towards the end, including Bubba Wallace. Cindric is now the ninth driver in history to earn his first career cup win in the Daytona 500. Here's Cindric after winning the Daytona 500.
I'm surrounded by great people. That's all there is to it. I know there's going to be highs and lows. Being a rookie in a field of drivers this strong, I'm just grateful for the opportunity, excited for the climb, the mountain we've got ahead of us on the two team. But we're in the playoffs. That's one good box checked, but my gosh, what an awesome group of fans. What an awesome race car. Just really thankful.
So exciting finish to complete the Super Bowl of racing for NASCAR at the beginning of the season with the Daytona 500. All right, we close with this one. It was interesting weekend of sports. We didn't have football, right? I mean, how do we possibly live without football? No football. I honestly didn't miss it because there was a lot of other stuff going on. It was a beautiful weekend weather-wise. So we were able to do stuff outside with the kiddos, so forth and so on. We buried our cat. There's a cat passed away after being with us for 17 and a half years, so that was somewhat tough, but we took care of that. So we had a lot of things going on, but we watch basketball. We watch KU. We watch K-State, and there's plenty of basketball going on. And, of course, the Daytona 500 is going on, and the NBA All-Star Weekend, and there's plenty that was still happening without football. But the story that kind of stole the headlines a little bit over the weekend was what happened at the end of the Michigan-Wisconsin men's basketball game. If you don't know what happened, after the game at the handshake line, Juwan Howard, head coach of Michigan, part of the Fab Five, remember him?
Yeah.
He and Wisconsin coach Greg Gard got into it with some words, and eventually Howard threw a punch or a slap, whatever you want to call it, and that landed on an assistant coach's head for Wisconsin. And then luckily they got it controlled. It looked like it was going to break out. Who knows if it'd go into the stands. It reminded me of Malice in the Palace just a little bit from the standpoint of things just escalate so quickly, and it was over there close to the stands because it's near the scorer's table.
Mm-hmm.
And then some players got riled up, and you know, it typically is going to happen. In some cases, you're just trying to defend yourself. And so here we go. Let's hear from both coaches here. You're going to hear Greg Gard, the head coach of Wisconsin, talk about this. When they went through the handshake line, Juwan Howard basically wasn't happy that Wisconsin called a timeout with less than 25 seconds remaining, up 14 points. It also should be pointed out that Juwan Howard was pressing down 14 with less than 25 seconds against Wisconsin's backup. So Wisconsin had already brought in the scrubs, and Juwan Howard was still pressing them. And then Greg Gard called a timeout because he was running out of time to get across the timeline, and it was Michigan pressing his backups. He wanted to give them the best chance to excel and get it across half court. He even told his team, we're not going to shoot it, but we want to get it past half court so we don't have a turnover, something for them to work on. And this is the way I look at it. Juwan Howard, as a coach, if he chooses to press down 14, why can't Greg Gard call a timeout? So Juwan Howard got all riled up and mad and upset because Wisconsin called a timeout. Greg Gard was kind of upset because they were pressing. So in essence, you had two guys that let their egos get in the way of stuff that were unhappy with each other. In a game that you happen to see millions of times where a team's up double digits, the game's over, you just dribble out the clock, you back up, you don't play defense, the shot clock's turned off, there's no need to press, there's no need to call a timeout, and nothing happens. And then, yeah, you're disappointed, maybe you're disgruntled, you go, you handshake, you give the guy a handshake on the other team, and you're like, yay, thanks for beating us. And you go to the locker room, ticked off. That's what should have happened. That's not what happened. Juwan Howard decided his team on the bubble, top 10 preseason team, I'm sure he's frustrated. I would be too with the talent he has on his team, and they might not make the tournament. And so they lose, and they lose by 14. So it wasn't relatively that close at the end. And then he's upset because of a timeout. And to me, there's a bigger issue here than the timeout. It's Juwan Howard being frustrated, which happens to everybody. We understand that part. But when you're a head coach, you're a leader of men or women. You're the leader of your team. And this is the second altercation Juwan Howard's got into with another head coach. He got into it with Mark Turgeon, who was the head coach of Maryland, I think a year or two ago. Mm-hmm. And he was yelling and screaming at him. And that's just, I mean, I don't know what message you're sending to your players. I think that's the scary precedent. I'm not saying Juwan Howard is 100% guilty of everything. Greg Gard, you know, could he have not called the timeout? Yeah, he could have not called the timeout, but he was upset because Juwan Howard. It was gamesmanship is what it was. Let's be honest. Juwan Howard pressed. Greg Gard didn't like it. He called timeout, and then Howard didn't like that. And then Howard got riled up, and then he got too fired up. Here is Greg Gard talking about why he called a timeout. And then Juwan Howard afterwards did not apologize for anything.
Well, apparently he didn't like that I called the timeout to reset the 10-second call because we only had 4 seconds to get the ball over half court. And I didn't want to put my backups. I had all my bench guys in the game. I didn't want to put them in that position of scrambling with only 4 seconds. So I took a timeout, and it got us a new 10 seconds and helped them, you know, get organized to get the ball in. And he did not like that when he came through the handshake line. So I'll leave it at that, and the tape will show the rest.
I had all the reserves in. I was not going to put them in a position when the ball had already got knocked out of bounds to have to break a press in 4 seconds when they're coming cold off the bench. So I took a timeout, which I'm allowed to do, obviously, and brought them over and tried to get them organized. They haven't all been on the floor in pressure situations before, and I wanted to give them the best chance to have success coming up the floor and tell them we're not going to shoot the ball. All we're doing is get the ball, break the pressure, come up, and we'll dribble out the clock. So we got the full 10 seconds to break that press instead of 4 seconds. So we were on the spot, we got organized, and that is the situation that he apparently was upset with.
You know, I addressed with the head coach that I will remember that because of that timeout, and for someone to touch me, and I think that was very uncalled for him to touch me, as we were verbalizing and communicating with one another. So that's what ended up happening. That's what escalated.
Somebody pointed out, I was like, what was the over-under on this game? Is that why he was pressing? Did Howard have money on this game? Did Greg Gard have the under and want to make sure? No, actually, they had already gone over. It was 138.5, and they were 140 points. So the over was already there. So there was nothing betting-wise that should have been involved in this game from that standpoint. The spread was Wisconsin by 2.5, and they were up 14. So there should be no gambling that was tied to this. But there was a theory that somebody said, well, what if it was the over-under, and Juwan Howard's trying to make sure he covered. I was like, well, who knows? I'll at least listen to it. Let me look at the odds. Oh, wait a minute. That doesn't work because the over-under was 138.5, and they were 140
could
points.
Could have always bought some points, though. You know?
Well, it could be. Could be. But I guess my question is, why when you're down 77-63 with less than 25 seconds left, why are you pressing? That's my first question. Mm-hmm. That would be my question, and I don't think it was asked. Maybe it was. I didn't listen to the whole press conference. I would think the clip would be there. The first question I would ask Juwan Howard would be, why do you think they called the timeout? And then, so I don't upset him right off the bat. Why do you think they called the timeout? Or why are you upset? Okay, he says that. Why do you think they called the timeout? And he may say, I don't know. I don't like it. Okay, why were you pressing? Because he said he wasn't happy with you. He didn't say he was happy with you pressing, but he mentioned that you were pressing. Like, why were you pressing down 14? To me, that's the questions you should be asking. And I don't know if the media anymore asks the right questions. But to me, Juwan Howard, the question you need to ask him, obviously, is, well, what precipitated you throwing a punch? That's the first question, obviously. Mm-hmm. What were you so mad about? And he says, well, I'm not happy with the timeout. That's what he said. He never apologized for what he did. He said, Greg Gard kind of grabbed me because he was trying to explain to him what he did. As Howard was trying to move past, and he said, well, somebody touches me, that escalated it. Well, that might have escalated a little bit, but if you weren't, I mean, that's just the way he was raised to defend himself. And Juwan Howard's taken that personally, but he had plenty of time between when Greg Gard touched him and by the time he threw a punch. So it wasn't like it was instant escalation. So I don't buy that one very much. But my question to him would have been twofold. I'd be like, why were you upset after the game? And he says the timeout. And then my next question would have been, if I'm allowed a couple follow-ups, my first follow-up would be, why do you think he called the timeout? And he might say, well, I don't care. He shouldn't have. Fine. And then my next follow-up would be, why are you pressing with less than 25 seconds to go down 14? Like, I think I would say, why do you believe that Coach Guard called a timeout up 14 with less than 25 seconds to go? And he says, well, that's basically insinuating he didn't like it, kind of unsportsmanlike. And then I would follow up with, okay, why were you pressing with under 25 seconds to go up 14? Because that would at least show that you're connecting dots, saying, can you maybe see it both ways here, that you both were a little bit stupid? I'm not saying they're stupid people. We've talked about the word stupid lately. But, you know, stupid things. People, everybody does stupid things. These coaches aren't stupid. You know, I think their egos got involved, both of them. I personally believe that when Jarrod Howard did the full court press thing, I think Greg Gard did that too. Mm-hmm. I thought it was gamesmanship. I listened to Greg Gard's explanation afterwards. Why do you care if your scrubs turn it over up 14 anyway? Like, you still had 4 seconds.
Yeah, that's just lip service, that part of it.
I agree.
He did it because he was being pressed.
That's
and
right.
Didn't like that part of it.
That's right.
So
and he knew the rules. I can reset the 10
yeah.
by calling a timeout. So he took it a step. Jarrod Howard did the first thing wrong because he shouldn't have been pressing down 14 with 25 seconds to go. The game's over, all right? He shouldn't have been doing that. Although I'll say, as a coach, it's your team. If you want to press, that's fine. But don't get all mad at the other coach for coaching his team by utilizing a timeout. What they both did was legal. Jarrod Howard can press if he's up 30, down 30, with less than 25 seconds to go. That's his prerogative. That is his decision. The other coach gets upset at it. That's that coach's problem because Jarrod Howard is playing within the rules. On the flip side, Jarrod Howard can't be getting mad at a guy for calling a timeout when you're sitting there pressing the team yourself.
Yeah.
So two wrongs don't make a right. So they're both culpable in this situation. If Greg Gard takes the high road and doesn't call a timeout, lets his team turn it over, Michigan is going to shoot a shot. They might make a three. The ball's out of bounds, and Wisconsin throws it in, and the game's over. And Wisconsin wins by 11 instead of 14. Who really cares? Because there was nothing in regards to the gambling side of it. So who cares? And you could argue that. If you want to defend Jawan Howard, you can say, well, Greg Gard's the baby because he's the one that called the timeout. And I could say, well, that's fine, but do you really think Jawan Howard would appreciate Wisconsin pressing his team with less than 25 seconds to go? And do you think Greg Gard would really appreciate Jawan Howard calling a timeout up 14? I think they both would hate both sides of that.
Mm.
So they ribbed each other. There probably was something before this game between these two, I'm guessing.
I would think probably so.
And then where three wrongs don't make a right. So both coaches did something kind of silly. Let's be honest. They're a little bit childish in what they did. But then after the game, there is I'm sorry. You can make all excuses in the world. You as a head coach cannot be throwing a punch in a handshake line. You just can't. Michigan Athletic Director Ward Manuel released a statement. I am aware of and watched the end of our men's basketball game. There is no excuse for any of our staff or student athletes to get into a physical altercation with others, regardless of instigating factors. I reached out and apologized to Chris McIntosh and President Coleman at Wisconsin. I reached out to the chancellor as well to apologize for the totally unacceptable behavior. We will review the situation more thoroughly and work with the Big Ten Conference to determine their disciplinary actions and will determine if any further disciplinary actions are needed. That's from the athletic director at Michigan. Michigan, let's give them credit for their leadership and the administration saying and coming out very quickly and saying, listen, we don't condone what happened. We're not happy. This is not who we are. So I give them a lot of credit for doing that. Jawan Howard has not apologized for anything as of now, as mm-hmm. far as we know. He didn't yesterday. So the question now is, what kind of punishment do you think Jawan Howard will get or should get? And should Greg Gard, the head coach of Wisconsin, get any kind of suspension or any kind of punishment either?
There's a lot of things that could happen on the Jawan Howard side of that because, mm-hmm. like, his team's underachieving, right? And it's what we talked about, I think, on Friday. If your
do you think this is a fireable offense?
I don't. I don't think it is, mm-hmm. but I think Michigan could easily
try to find a way to make it
a four-cause fireable offense.
I agree.
I think they could definitely take the approach to seek that out and
sure.
try.
Yeah.
I think it's probably a 2-3 game suspension
mm-hmm.
is where it would probably fall for Howard. I don't know that anything should or will happen to Guard. He was just – Jawan Howard started that, right? by saying, I'll remember that, and kind of was standoffish going through that line.
Right.
And he just, his reaction was, hey, I want to kind of explain what I did here. I do believe that part of it.
I do.
For from Greg Gard, that I he was do. Just kind of
He wasn't trying to be mean. He was just trying to grab him. Because
Juwan Howard was just going
to
literally walk all the way across from him and just say that one thing and leave. And then you know, he, Greg Gard really didn't do anything physical other than he start yelling at Juwan Howard after it happened. Obviously, I think everybody would do that.
Sure, right.
I don't think that he'll get suspended for anything, and I don't know that he should.
I don't think Greg Carr gets suspended or anything. There might be some kind of reprimand, but
yeah, I mean,
just to show that they're doing something on both sides. I think the bigger question is, what do you do now with Juwan Howard?
Yeah.
Because this isn't the first time he's got an altercation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I just mentioned the one with Mark Turgeon in Maryland when Turgeon was
the coach
there.
Those are things you can add up and try to get for cause to get him out.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And they have underachieved, so they haven't performed absolutely. As well. They had a great year last year. I'd have to look at their schedule. I think, this is just me, I think you have to send a message without question that this is not acceptable. We don't care who started what. You cannot be, as a head coach or even a player either, if you expect your players to not be throwing punches and getting into fights, how can you not do something to your head coach when he does something like that in front of millions on national TV? You know, it's like if you go to a high school game and there's a whole bunch of vulgar chants being thrown out there, and the athletic director or coaches get all over them and tell the students, you can't do that. And then the AD gets all mad about something, gets on the PA microphone and curses. It's like, wait a minute, why should we follow you and do what you say and handle our conduct the way we should when you can't even do it? You know, it practice what you preach, right? You know, do what you preach. And to me, if Juwan Howard doesn't have any kind of serious repercussions, the message to his team is that that's okay. And it's not okay. Because I want to tell you why it's not okay. First of all, you're putting other innocent bystanders in harm's way. Not only assistant coaches for both teams, but your own players, you put them in a tough spot. The other team's players who are student athletes. But you know who else we put in risk there? With people in the stands on the front row and the scorer's table.
Mm-hmm.
Innocent bystanders. How many times do you see this, whether it's a horrible violent act or whatever else it might be, or altercations and fights, that usually there's innocent bystanders that get hurt, sometimes worse than the people involved in the actual beginning of it, right? They aren't doing anything wrong. They're just at the wrong place at the wrong time. So something's got to be done about that. And I think there will be. I don't think there's any doubt that there's going to be repercussions for Juwan Howard. The question's going to be, what kind of repercussions? Because I'm looking at their schedule right now. And by the way, they're 14-11, 8-7 conference. They're a bubble team at best. They could still work their way into the tournament. Their team might rally around Howard because of this, or this might be a major distraction. Here's what I would do. And this may seem extreme to some. It may seem just right to some. There are some immediately say he needs to be fired. I would say I won't go that far. Because there have been altercations with coaches before in sports, and there have been things that were worse than what happened between Michigan and Wisconsin. So and guys have not been fired in worse situations. Okay, I don't have time to go through all the examples. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Juwan Howard should be fired today. I think that's the easy knee-jerk reaction. But I do believe that he should be suspended for the rest of the regular season, or at least through the end of the. Before you get into the Big Ten tournament, okay? And I think you could make an argument he should be suspended for the rest of the season. I think you could really want to send a message. You could do that. Now, ultimately, the biggest message is to fire the guy. I don't think you fire the guy over that, but as Dusty just explained, there could be all kinds of other things going on, and this is kind of the final straw. That this gives him the ultimate excuse to say, hey, man, second time you've done this, your team isn't performing well, we haven't been happy, we know of other things you've done, and so forth and so on, lost your temper, we can't have it leading young men anymore, you're fired. That could easily happen today or tomorrow. I don't think they will fire him right away. And he might get to play out the season and then not be back next year, possibly. Or he'll be mind his P's and Q's and he'll be back for the next 10 years. I don't know. But I think there has to be some kind of repercussions. And to me, they have four straight home games. How about that? Michigan has four straight home games and then a road game at Ohio State. I think at the very least, this is just me and maybe it's too severe, I think at the very least he should be suspended for the next five games. He could come back for the Big Ten tournament. I would be okay with that. I would listen to the argument he should be suspended for the rest of the season. I would listen to it. I'm not saying that's what I would do. I'd listen to it. Some people say he should get suspended for 2 games, and that should be it. I've read that. I think if you want to send a pretty significant message, it's got to be more than just a game or two. That's just me. Mm-hmm. So I think you are responsible as a student-athlete for your actions. As a coach, you're certainly responsible, maybe even more so, because you're the leaders of young men. You got to send the message, the right message. And to me, Juwan Howard should say, hey, listen, I'm trying to do this, so forth and so on, but I apologize. I let you down. That's not how a leader should act, whether I'm provoked or not. And I made a mistake. Please forgive me. And we all make mistakes and so forth and so on. And now let's go get into the NCAA tournament. I'm going to be suspended for the next 4 or 5 games. You guys rally without me, and we'll be ready to go come Big Ten tournament time. That's fine. I don't know how Juwan Howard is going to go about it, if he's going to play the victim. I don't know if he's going to play it as that or what. I have no idea. But I think as the Big Ten makes this decision, they should suspend him for at least 2 to 3 games. But I would go ahead and just say you're done until the Big Ten tournament. What do you think? What do you think would be appropriate a punishment for a guy that threw a punch, or, you know, you could argue who provoked what, I guess. But the bottom line is nobody else was – he was the first one to throw something.
Yeah, I feel like would be definitely for the rest of the regular season. Send a real big message, I would say, regular season and Big Ten tournament, and then figure out if you make the tournament, maybe you can come.
You let him back for the NCAA tournament,
but I don't think that would happen. they would still send a message, but I don't think they'll go. It's either going to be the rest of. I feel like it's either going to be the rest of the regular season if they're trying to send a message.
We're talking regular season prior to the Big Ten tournament.
Prior to the Big Ten tournament, and then they'll let him play that part out and coach that. I don't feel like if you're going to suspend him for the Big Ten tournament, you're probably going to suspend him for the whole postseason. Like, I don't.
Yeah, I don't.
How are you going to, like, separate that if you actually end up making the tournament? So.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like appropriate would be just the rest of the regular season and then
I think so.
Have him take the time and
I think
figure
so.
Out where he went wrong and come back.
I think so. Tournament. And I think the other thing you could do, and you've heard this before, Bobby Knight went through this whole thing, the no tolerance policy type of deal. I think if I'm whoever is in charge of talking to Juwan Howard from Michigan, whoever's the one that sends the message needs to say, listen, coach, we brought you on. We believe you're the right guy for the job. We still believe you're the right guy for the job. However, you've got to – that's two now. You've had two altercations mm-hmm. with two conference coaches. You are on a no-tolerance policy. The next time you get an altercation like this after a game with a coach, you're gone. There is no tolerance. You're gone. And you could say 3 strikes and you're out, because that's two now that he's been involved in after games. And it's one thing to be pumped up and fired up, and as somebody said, and it was kind of somewhat funny, Juwan Howard's still having problems with timeouts because the Fab Five, Chris Webber, called a timeout that they didn't have in 1993, and now he has a problem with the timeout by Wisconsin. It's kind of a funny little joke I saw. But all kidding aside, you just can't let this happen again. And so to me, there's got to be a strong, strong message sent. And whether that's the Big Ten saying you're done for the rest of the regular season and you're back for the Big Ten tournament, whether it's done for the whole rest of the season counting postseason tournament play, or whether you're firing the guy. I don't think this is the sole reason you would fire the guy, but it'll be interesting to see what the Big Ten does, what Michigan does in regards to punishment for Juwan Howard. And like I said, I think Wisconsin, Greg Gard wasn't happy with the pressing, so then he did the timeout thing to kind of, you know, I think he can hide behind the, well, you know, we had a 10 count, we can reset it. He's playing within the rules. So was Juwan Howard by pressing. I think there was some gamesmanship by both guys, and then obviously neither liked what the other did. And so thus we had what we had. So we'll see what they do with Juwan Howard. Thanks for tuning in to Sports Ticket. Once again, state wrestling coming up on Friday and Saturday with reports from Hayes. And we will have high school basketball tomorrow night. Our schedule posted, ncksports.com.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.